My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome in to episode 29, Best Dans in Baseball. I'm Daniel Shoptaw, that's Dan Buffa. We are here on the off day. We kind of look at this week and we thought, oh man, I hate to have all these days off. After that first series in Pittsburgh, I think we kind of needed it. The Cardinals start off 0-3. Everybody's kind of stirred up. One half of the fan base says it's just three games. The other half of the fan base seems to think the sky is falling. Is there a middle ground between the two?
It's just a lot of the stuff that people were worrying about in the offseason are kind of really getting kind of smacking us in the face in these first three games. You know, the injuries kind of cutting out the depth, the strikeouts. First base is now kind of a mess because Holiday has to go back to the outfield. There's just not a lot of hitting. I mean, I think we have four extra base hits through three games and 37 strikeouts and 10 walks. And you're not seeing a lot of offensive firepower. Now, you know, you face the Pirates and PNC where the Cardinals have gotten swept, you know, before in the last 2 years. But it's just the timing of it. The fact that we had to go out there and, you know, face a rival in the division that's kind of being forgotten about. You know, you face Lariano. And you face a couple guys that, you know, are decent pitchers, but, you know, the Cardinals just looked overmatched. I mean, I don't know if they're trying to – I don't know if they think they're all of a sudden a home run team and they're just kind of swinging crazy or they just can't really connect or, you know, you really want to see them go down to Atlanta this weekend and slap them around because if they go to Atlanta and they keep doing this, then there's going to be even more concern. Even though it will still be technically the first week of the season up until Sunday – if we're losing like our third game in a row on Sunday, I think you're going to have to increase, you know, Budweiser sales in St. Louis. You're going to have to increase the blood pressure meds. And, you know, we're only in April. You know, there's been people, I mean, you know, you don't want to list when people go, this is going to be a horrible year because the Cardinals have a lot of pitching. They have bats that can work. It's just the first three games, that kind of brought out every fear you had about this team.
Yeah, and again, like you say, you run up against Pittsburgh, who is a pretty decent team. Liriano's going to, you know, 9 times out of 10 probably beat this team, it seems like. And, you know, game two in that series, the Cardinals should have won. You look at Michael Walker, we'll get into that some as well. But, you know, that game, that was a 5-3 game. He scored 5 runs. And a lot of times with this pitching staff, 5 runs should be enough to win. It wasn't that night. And once you get into Pirates' bullpen, the bullpen of the Pittsburgh Pirates is probably in the ballpark of the Cardinals' bullpen. And the Cardinals have a very good bullpen. So you face against, you know, Tony Watson and Mark Melancon and some of those other guys, it's not too surprising that they can kind of settle down. But, you know, you still would like to see if you could get, you know, a run off of them here and there. And then, you know, game three, that one, you don't have much of an explanation for, I don't think. You felt like that was a situation where you should have been able to, come into it. But yeah, the Tommy Pham injury may be one of those huge injuries that we don't, you know, going into the season, even though he's a fourth outfielder, he's a guy that is getting more prominence, was going to get more prominence with Holiday playing first base. And now he's out for a month. Brandon Peña is out for a month. Even the little bit of offense that we thought this team was going to have is struggling right now with the bodies that are there.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And you didn't really expect to see Jeremy Hazelbaker have to contribute one. If you saw him having one of the two home runs to the first series of the season back in, like, December, and you just need to go right to the casino right now and do some hardcore gambling. But It's just, it's one of those things where you, exactly, I mean, what you said, I mean, you lose your backup catcher, your outfield depth, which is what I preached all offseason, that, you know, your outfield depth is not what it used to be. Grichuk's here, Biscotti's here, Pham was, you know, was supposed to be a guy who was going to get some starting time, play off the bench. He's gone. We know it should be a month, but Tommy Pham-wise, it could be 2 months, and now you're losing him, and now the Holiday at first base, which was going to help offset strikeout heaven with, you know, Matt Adams and Brandon Moss. Now that's been shifted away. And so you're really, you just got leaks, you know, and it all started with Johnny Peralta going down, because Johnny Peralta wasn't an offensive juggernaut, but he was a guy that can give you, you know, 17, 20 home runs. He hit around 270, 280. He was a guy who hit a number of spots in the lineup. And now when he went down, it just kind of kicked over a whole second dominoes when Pena went down and Pham's gone now. And now you're relying on Hazelbaker. Now the one guy really in Memphis that's ready to go, ready being kind of a stretched out term, as he just started there, is Charlie Tilson. So, you know, you don't have that, oh, don't worry, we have Biscotti down there. You know, now he's a starter on your team. You don't have the firepower you once had a couple years ago in Grichuk. He's up here and he's bound to get hurt. And he's also struck out 6 out of 10 times. So, So what you're looking at, you know, if you're looking for answers, your answers are going to be the players you're looking at right now. They have to do better. I mean, there is no help on the way. Bo isn't going to make a trade for a monstrous bat in May. Yeah. It's just not going to happen. You're going to see this team really go up against it. Now, as we just pointed out, it was the Pirates. It was PNC. It was Lariano. I mean, you didn't even see Gerrit Cole, which I don't even think made a difference. I mean, Gerrit, you know, last couple of nights, or at least last night, you know, we beat up on Jonathan Nease a little bit, which was good. But and as you pointed out, you know, 5 runs wins a game most nights for this team. It should win a game. It has to win a game this year. But, you know, everything kind of went wrong. I mean, you know, the defense was kind of sloppy. You know, there was everything that kind of could go against the Cardinals went against them. I mean, this is not making excuses. It's just when you watch these games, you see a lot of the tide of the games were kind of going against the Cardinals. Once they kind of got tied in game two, you knew going to extra innings, this just wasn't looking good. It was only a matter of time. The Cardinals had several chances, and I think in the 9th and the 10th and even the 11th, they kind of maybe pushed that run across, but they didn't. The bright spot that I really saw was a lot of the bullpen. I mean, at least Sung Oh, let me tell you, if this guy, you know, he comes over from Korea and striking guys out, locating pitches. Kevin Seacrest looked really good. Rosenthal looked good. Those three guys look good. I mean, Broxton looked better than, you know, than we thought he was going to look. The bullpen got tagged a little bit, but, you know, Seth Maness, unfortunately, looks like the Seth Maness of the spring training and the end of last year. I really think that he's going to be a guy that's going to, his time could be numbered, especially if Walden starts to come back or Tui Valala shows some strength. But, you know, it's just one of those things where you want to think that this team is going to, you know, hopefully capitalize against the bad teams, which is this weekend. But, you know, they're going to go up against their division a lot in these 2 months. So you're going to see what this offense really is made of. Because, as I pointed out, there's no reinforcements. What you have on this roster right now is what you got to fight with.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it is a very, yeah, you're right, you're stuck with it.
I mean, usually, think about it, the last, like, 3 or 4 years ago, well, we got this guy down in Memphis, but there's really nobody there anymore, and it's like, you kind of have to look within. I mean, you really, truly have to look, okay, what do we got, and when can we do this?
Yeah, the good thing is that if they're facing their division, they face the Reds and the Brewers, and that will help.
Yes.
They don't play the Pirates again until, you know, they play them at home in May, and then I think it's like after the All-Star break before they play them again. You know, they got the Cubs coming. I think the Cubs series are kind of scattered out pretty well.
Yeah, the Cubs come on the 18th this month. You're right. I mean, we get a lot of really, you know, if you want to find your bats, you know, you got the Braves and then the Brewers and then the Reds now before the Cubs come in on the 18th. So you got a lot of games here to go, okay, do we have our bats? Are they still in Jupiter? Do we need to go get them? Because then you got the Cubs, and then you get the Padres, and then you get the Diamondbacks and Nationals to finish up April. So you kind of have So maybe, you know, this is a good little stretch. You have a stretch of games against, you know, the teams that aren't really expected to win, but I have a feeling these teams are going to give the Cardinals problems for some reason. But you're right, though. I mean, this is kind of like a good, like, binge for the Cardinals to go on and find their bats.
Well, and maybe. I mean, like you say, we have to figure that out. I mean, the Cardinals, it's kind of funny, you know. I don't think any of us would have thought that, you know, 40-something percent of their runs would have come by the home run by now.
Yeah.
But, you know, a solo home run and a two-run shot, and, you know, that's three of the seven runs that they scored against Pittsburgh came via the home run, which may be slightly overrated. Pittsburgh didn't hit a single home run in that series.
They did not.
But they scored significantly more runs than the Cardinals did. It's all about actually being able to hit, and that's why the strikeouts are very concerning. I mean, this is a team that has struck out 10 times or more in each game. They've struck out, I think, I did the number this morning, I think, but it's close to 40% of their outs are coming by the strikeout.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I mean, just if this offense is led by Matt Carpenter, when he goes 1-for-11 in the series, Cardinals aren't going to win any games, man. You got Carpenter going 1-for-11 and Biscotti going 2-for-11. And then Holiday going 1-for-10. So when those three guys, which I think are your three best hitters in your lineup, just all around hitter wise as far as getting on base and pop, if those three guys do that, I mean you're going to get swept more than likely, unless your pitching is just amazing.
Yeah, Cardinals, like I say, they're about, they're kind of in the middle of the pack, a little low on two home runs. They're about, I think it's 20th, but you know, on base percentage, or OPS, they're at 26th in the majors with only the Padres who got shut out in three straight games against them. They're the only National League team that's below them. Now, you look at some of these other teams, the Royals are below them. They only had a couple of games, though. So it's a little bit scary to see that. Now, like I said, on the flip side of that, the pitching, you know, we've said all along this year that if the Cardinals are going to win, they're going to win a lot of 3-2 games. They're going to win games that the offense does just enough, while the starting pitching, you know, pitches outstanding, and then you get into the very strong bullpen. You know, that wasn't the case in this game. I mean, the Cardinals now are 20th in the majors with ERA with a 4.78, which is, you know, better than Houston's 9.36. It's always fun to look at these numbers after like three games and see how skewed they can be. But, you know, a team that, you know, didn't ever see much out of, you know, we saw Adam Wainwright go five. We saw Michael Walker not get through five. We saw Mike Leake not get through five. Mike Leake threw 40 pitches in his first inning and walked in a run. It's the kind of situation where you can factor in the cold, maybe you can factor in first start, maybe you can factor in a lot of things, but if, you know, it's one of those things that I think there's got to be a lot of concern, because we knew they weren't going to be like they were last year, but we also thought they'd be a lot better than what we saw already.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors where you can kind of make somewhat of excuses for it, but you're also going to come back to the fact that, you know, I mean, like I said, your best hitters have to do better. I mean, you know, their top three guys got to do better. If they get on base more, you're obviously scoring more runs, or you're doing better. And yeah, there were some bright spots. I mean, the pitching wasn't completely bad. I mean, Michael Walker had a rough start, but I could, you know, that's just something that I kind of told you could have happened. You know, Mike Leake wasn't great. He wasn't terrible. I mean, Wainwright was okay. You know, but I think a lot of the things that you kind of said and we all kind of whispered about, that this pitching should be really good, but it's not going to be historically great. And I think that this could be a call to the arms of the offense, you know, telling them, hey, you're going to have to do more this year, or this is going to be a different year than many people expect. But I mean, you have to hit more. I mean, you can't just keep on scoring, averaging 3.5 runs a season and expect to put up these kind of win totals.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta be able to score some runs, but I don't know. I mean, it's just, I think right now we look at this team, and if you want to start talking about the holes, it's a long conversation. There's just so many different things, and again, there are, you know, a lot of people probably listening to this are saying, hey, it's only three games, you know, let's not, you know, assume everything's doomed, and that's true. I mean, I wrote in my post today that, or yesterday, I guess I didn't Yeah, it was this morning. I don't know when it was. I slept since then, maybe. Maybe I haven't. Anyway, the 1998 Yankees started off their season 0-3, lost, I think they lost four of their first five, and wound up winning 114 games. Now, that was a very talented team. We don't really know how talented this team is. You look at this lineup, and I know a lot of what we've focused on so far is that Yadier Molina tends to hit fifth. And there's a lot of criticism of Molina hitting fifth. And I get that. I think that there's probably legitimate criticism for Molina hitting fifth. But honestly, right now, Molina's the only guy, one of the few guys that's actually getting hits.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a guy that's got the most hits on the team. Now, I would still like to have him maybe even, I mean, the other night I said you could have Jerko batting in the fifth spot, which is just really defines your problems right there. But, I mean, yeah, Yadi's got three hits. I mean, they're singles. That's kind of what Yadi's going to do. But, I mean, him hitting fifth is really just displays how patched together this lineup is. I mean, if other guys are hitting, you know, you might be able to put him down the lineup. But, yet, you know, the only reason I can see Matheny's not going to put him, you can't put, like, Grichuk and Moss back-to-back, but that's just a bunch of strikeouts. So I understand to a certain degree. I'd like to see Molina. I think he's a perfect seven hitter because he can just kind of spray some hits down the lineup. You know, he's still a very smart hitter. But, yeah, he's got three hits, and I wish he wasn't doing it in the fifth spot. But, you know, what are you going to do with this lineup? It's kind of a patched-together kind of looking crew.
Yeah, and again, I'm not advocating for Molina fifth, don't get me wrong, and I don't believe that Mike Matheny necessarily is putting him there because he thinks he's the best option, or he thinks that he's got some magical resurgence of his bat. I think Matheny's putting him there because he's always put Molina.
I mean, you could have bat like Mike Leake there fifth yesterday. Supposedly, he's some kind of big hitter. Yeah. It wouldn't be outside of the okay, that'd be so La Russa style to do that, but you never know. I guess if things get dire enough, you might see Mike Leake hit in the middle of the order.
I don't know about that. I mean, that's interesting. Eighth. This order just seems like, I mean, depending on who's out there, it is very hard to construct an order that makes a lot of sense, especially, you know, Grichuk is going to hit fourth, and that shifts your lineup a lot, but when he's not playing, you know, like yesterday with Brandon Moss, I think, was hitting fourth.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of... Yeah, you know, yeah, Moss has the power, but is he?
I mean, yeah, if he's Brandon Moss from 2 years ago, that's great. I mean, mm-hmm. He's giving you power, but, you know, we're not even sure that guy exists anymore.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, you've got guys like, you know, Colton Wong, who also you think, you know, sixth, seventh, somewhere in there, maybe. You know, you've got, you know, when Jerko's in there, you don't really want to see him higher than sixth. You know, when Diaz played on Tuesday, why he didn't play on Wednesday is still beyond me, but, you know, you can't have him above, like, eighth. It just doesn't feel like there's a natural fit. I mean, it maybe we've been spoiled. I mean, the last few years, even if you go all the way back to the Pujols era, maybe you knew you had Pujols 3, Holiday 4, or, you know, things like that, and that kind of helped your lineup kind of fit together. And right now, and it's kind of the same issue with the roster, is there's a lot of pieces on this team that are either redundant or just don't seem to fit together as well as we'd like them to. Now, doesn't mean that they can't be a winning team. Doesn't mean that, you know, we wave the white flag on this season in the first week. I'm not saying that at all, but maybe it's just going to take some hammering of those pieces to get them to fit into the spots that they don't naturally fit into.
Yeah, I mean, you have a lineup, you have an offense that kind of can get easily pushed around, and then you can see a hole. Like, you know, you lost Peralta, and all of a sudden shortstop was like, was a black hole. And now, you know, Pham got hurt, and Holiday left first base, and first base suddenly looked weaker. And then second base looks weaker because you're going to have Jerko playing short. I mean, even though, you know, Greg Garcia might be one of the most reliable, you know, bats in the lineup, at least according to Hay. And according to his stat page, he is 1-for-2, okay? He's hitting 500, leading this team in batting average. But no, I mean, it just really tells you how weak this lineup can get if a few things go wrong, especially injury. I mean, just imagine for a second if Grichuk gets hurt. Then you just kind of look even more weaker. What if one of your big guys falls? And then, you know, this team's like one injury away from being really frail offensively. And you've already seen the effects of what it can happen when you lose a guy like Peralta, who's a starter, plays 150 4,550 games a season. Your first base, which all spring we were like, okay, so Holiday's going to play there. He's going to play there. And now he's out and left. And now you have Adams, who just doesn't look right. He just looks like he's being overpowered. And, you know, one of the things about Adams is that, you know, how can you expect the guy to get comfortable if he doesn't get the at-bats? Like in the spring training, you know, this guy only plays one spot. I mean, you know, you can't send him out to left field like you can Moss or Holiday. That's one thing that – one of the things in Pittsburgh that the broadcasting tandem of Al Urbanski and Dan McLaughlin actually got right was when they talked about Adams really just not getting time to really get comfortable. I mean, you're still seeing a guy who just looks overmatched. And Brandon Moss, you know, 1-for-8, 3 strikeouts. Adams doesn't have a hit yet. Just looks overmatched. He struck out 4 or 6 times. You just see a team with certain holes in positions that, you know, winning teams can't have. You can't have a team with an empty spot at short. You can't have a team without any production from first base. I mean, you're going to lean on guys like if you lean on Carpenter too hard, he might collapse. You know, then you got to look to Piscotty, Holiday. I mean, this team, it's just, you know, they're getting a good stretch of games here where they can hopefully fix their issues against these weaker teams. But how close is this offense to becoming very weak?
It's, it can't. I mean, it's one bad, one key injury. And
it really is.
And it's done. I mean, and I'm not even talking Matt Carpenter key. I mean, Matt Carpenter is, you know, obviously the linchpin, but it doesn't take much because, like you said, Memphis doesn't have what it used to have. And that's, in some regards, some ways, it's because of the pitching first mentality that this team has had over the last 10 years, which is a great mentality to have, don't get me wrong. But, you know, when you are focused so heavily on those pitching prospects and you're so focused so heavily on keeping those pitching prospects, you can't develop the outfielders. You can't develop the shortstops. You can't develop the catchers. You can't develop those guys. And they have done it. I mean, they've had that spot. They've had Piscotty. They've had Grichuk that they went and got. You know, there was obviously Tavares, which that throws a whole – I mean, that whole situation, this whole thing could be a whole lot different had Tavares still be alive. I mean, that's, you know, not – you can't plan for that. But there is a gap in the talent levels.
But it really – yeah. I mean, what you say with Tavares, it really plugged a gap in your elite offensive talent. I mean, he was really – I mean, Piscotty's great, and, you know, Wong, you know, is a decent player. But Tavares, they had, like, big aspirations for him, and that kind of made him really shift back to a guy like Hayward and hope that he was going to re-sign. And that's kind of where Mazenog really had to reshift and rethink his entire offensive plan. Because people really get on about his offense. Well, you know, he kind of thought that he'd have Oscar Tavares right now playing right field for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that does factor into things that they've done. And, you know, people just haven't panned out. And they've got some guys, I think, lower in the system. But they're not there yet. And so, like you said, you're kind of sink or swim this year. You kind of think it's win maybe even for next year because, you know, the free agent market off this year is not any great shakes, especially in the offensive side of things. I mean, you look at people like Steven Strasburg that could be out there, but this team doesn't, and I say that, you know, even knowing what we've seen, this team doesn't need pitching. I mean, it's got a full rotation. You get Lance Lynn back next year, you're not going to go get pitching. So finding hitters is going to be a difficult situation, and you just kind of hope that these guys turn it around. Now, easily could. I mean, we could be here in 2 weeks and say, wow, you know, that it was just a kind of that aberration. When they finally heated up, they got going. But given that we've had these issues for basically 2 years now, maybe even 3 if you kind of, you know, took out the aberration that you saw in 2013 with that runners in scoring position bit, it's to see it already rearing its head makes you think this isn't a new problem. This is the same problem. And they spent all offseason not fixing it.
Yeah, I mean, they really did. I mean, as we said all offseason, it was a risk. You know, you're running a risk when you're trying to lean on internal options. Because when you go on, when you're leaning on internal options like Grichuk and Piscotty, you're hoping everybody else stays healthy. You're hoping that Johnny Peralta doesn't get hurt and is going to miss 2 months. You hope that your backup catcher doesn't get hurt. You hope that this doesn't hurt. Because you think that if everything stays in place to the way I designed it, if you're John Mozeliak, then we should be okay. We should at least be able to do what we did last year, maybe more, if, and this is where that two-letter word is going to get used so much with this offense in the past 2 months leading up to the season, 3 months, you know, if Brandon Moss can relocate that power, if Matt Holliday gets back to what he was doing 2 years ago, if, and now you're seeing some injuries happen, and now you're seeing some painful realities kind of starting to show. It's only three games. It's hard to quantify, really, use stats, well, except for the strikeouts. You can use those all you want. But it's just really hard, but it's also going to shed more of a light. That seed of Mazenok's going to get hot to just when it comes to his offense and how he didn't really go out and fix it. He chose not to really pay the money that the Mets paid at the Cespedes. He chose to not give Justin Upton a 6-year deal that the Tigers gave him. He got outbid by the Cubs. I mean, or at least when it comes to opt out, or Hayward may have just chose them. We're never going to know the exact details. But, you know, he lost out, and then he kind of decided to not pursue. And in not pursuing, yeah, it's great if it works out, but if this team struggles to produce offense and they're pitching buckles, I mean, even with the better bullpen, you still have to have good pitching. You know, it's just, you know, the injuries are kind of starting to mount up, but can this Cardinal team do that remarkable thing they did last year where they won in despite of every injury they had?
Yeah, and that's kind of where you want to cut them a little bit of slack, because they have had a ton of injuries last year. They've had a ton of injuries already starting this year. I mean, when you lose Lance Lynn for the whole season before the calendar even flips, you know, you've had Molina, who looks fine, thankfully. But, you know, you lose Peralta, you lose Pham, you lose Tejada, who comes in to replace Peralta and then doesn't even get a chance to play. And we haven't heard an update on him, which is a little bit scary. You know, I mean, you start looking at this and like, how much can one team take over this span? I mean, it comes to a point where, you know, the straw breaks the camel's back and that they're going to have to struggle. You know, whether they can do that, you know, if people can come back at a reasonable rate, you know, I don't think they're going to be out of the race in a month. So if Pena and Pham can be back in that time, now again, like you said, you don't rush Pham back because as soon as Pham gets back, he may get hurt again. I mean, you need him, 100%, and especially with an oblique injury. That's one of those things that just is a nagging injury that if you're not 100%, you just go back out and you just wind up re-aggravating it almost immediately, and you're out for another, you know, a few months. It's kind of like Matt Holliday's quad.
Yeah, I mean, and we've seen that because, you know, especially with guys that just have a different, you know, makeup with their bodies. I mean, some guys just don't, they heal better than others. Like, there was a time where I really thought Albert Pujols was an alien because he never got hurt, and even if he twisted his ankle 90 degrees the wrong way, he would stay in the game. But that's just a once in a lifetime kind of thing. Most people can re-injure stuff and they can, you know, and be out longer. Now, as we speak, you know, the Cubs have now experienced their first big injury. Kyle Schwarber had a little collision in the outfield with Dexter Fowler. He's out of the game. Could be a break. So now the Cubs are going to maybe finally experience a little what the Cardinals did last year and a little bit of taste of the adversity and these injuries.
Yeah, and I mean, you hate to hear that because you don't want anybody.
Yeah,
it was a bad.
I mean, it wasn't. I think it looks like from the image that he just kind of fell. It's that Dexter Fowler just basically fell on his leg. It was a nasty collision, and you hope that it's not like a. It's more of a break, not really a tear, because it was lower leg. So that's just tough. I mean, you know, Cardinal fans know that from Piscotty colliding into Peter Borderson, remarkably being okay. I thought Piscotty was going to be out for at least a month, but he was fine. But yes, the Cubs. I mean, that just tells you how, you know, you could be set, and then these things happen. These injuries that can go either way. And, you know, your adversity gets tested. The Cardinals know all about it. The Cubs will now know about it. It's crazy. I mean, you know, you think about baseball is a game where, you know, there shouldn't be any contact except when there is, like this case. I mean, people get hurt, but it's a game where it's played so often and so hard and every day that people do get hurt at a very high pace.
Yeah, and I mean, again, that was one of the things that I felt like, as much as the Cubs were favored on paper, and for good reason, I mean, they've obviously got a squad over there that's got a good chance. One of the things that I did feel like there was a possibility that the Cardinals would stay with them because, They did not have injuries last year. And
they did not.
That
no.
tends to even out. And, I mean, they got younger guys, so they're not likely as likely to get hurt. But like you say, I mean, things happen like this. They run into each other and stuff.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
Terrible. I mean, yeah, it's just one of those things where you can't plan for that. I mean, you know, Kyle Schwarber's is supposed to be like one of the big anchors in their lineup, and you know, now he might miss time. So now you're going to see the Cubs are going to have to shift, and they're going to have to make do, because the Cubs are going to thrive. I mean, they have good pitching. They have a good bullpen, the rotation, you know, the back end of it, you know, that they went out and got Lackey and they got the guys to do it, but they're really going to be what sets them apart is really, you know, their offense. So it's going to see how they kind of pivot from this, but that just tells you how often these things happen.
Yeah. I mean, and they've got some depth. I mean, they can be, you know, they could probably replace him, although it's difficult to replace that kind of power. You know, that might be...
game-changing power. As the Cardinals found out last October, when he's on, I mean, he may not be a good outfielder, but if he keeps swinging like that, like he did against the Cardinals last October, I mean, the guy's going to have a long career.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty good chance of it. I don't know. I think that the offense is something that they're just going to have to improve. I mean, there's really nothing else to it, and hopefully they can do that. Now, flip side of that, we'll talk about the pitching a little bit, and let's talk about Michael Wacha, because going down the stretch last year, he threw a shutout against Cincinnati the very first of August, but after that, his ERA was 4.59, did not look sharp. You know, there was a number of games, you know, there was that stretch in September where he only went past the fifth inning once, a couple games, only made it to four. Saw that again this time around. He just did not have the command that on his pitches. He ran his pitch count up. Now, he could have left with a 5-3 lead if Alamedes Diaz could pick up the ball and throw it to, you know, get start that double play. So, I mean, he didn't, you know, the defense is not helping him. But it still seems like he just, and again, if it was just that game, you'd say, okay, the weather is a problem. Couldn't get the grip on the ball, maybe with it being cold, stuff like that. But it seems, you know, spring training, he was not strong except for maybe his last start. It just seems that maybe whatever Michael Wacha's issue is, it's more of a long-term thing. I'm not talking about injury. It's just something he hasn't been able to really develop.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've always said that he kind of has a closer arsenal of pitches. He has two really good pitches, and he's got one or two that are okay he's kind of working on. He's got, you know, the fastball used to be his best friend. You know, he had the changeup, because he could throw him wherever he wanted to. The fastball, he could put it wherever he wanted, and when you can do that, and then you can spot that changeup, it's devastating for hitters. I mean, it's just what Carlos Martinez is doing, you know, if you add a sinker. You know, if you add another pitch to it, that's what Carlos Martinez does. I mean, you know, he'll rile up the high-octane fastball, but then he'll just cut you down with his off-speed stuff. But if you cannot locate your fastball and it's covering too much of the plate, then your changeup just really, it kind of loses all of its power. And really, if you look at his stats for last August as a whole, he was 3-0 with a 1.13 ERA. He only allowed 4 earned runs. But then in September, as you said, he just kind of blew up. I mean, it just, you know, 6 earned runs in 2 starts, 4 earned runs, a lot of the plate. I mean, they just started ripping him up. He only went 6 innings, and then he went 5-5, 4-4. So you really just saw, like, you know, Pandora's box kind of slowly got open with Michael Wacha and his location last year. And also, you know, first part of the year, he really benefited from, you know, some good luck on balls put in play. That kind of went away as the season closed up, and then we saw him get hammered by the Cubs and Wrigley. And then, you know, the other night, yes, I mean, he could have left that game, but even as I said, he just didn't look good. I mean, it just, you know, he allowed 10 hits, a lot of contact. I mean, you know, not a really stable start. And once again, you face a team in Pittsburgh, the Cardinals collectively just don't play well there. I'll give them that. And, you know, you want to see how Wacha responds, you know, against his next start. You know, maybe he'll be better. I mean, you know, because, you know, Wacha doesn't have to be an ace anymore. You know, people, when he came up in 2013 and wowed everybody in the playoffs, people thought this guy was going to, you know, he was getting comparisons to Carp and Nueno, and I think those have died off for good. I mean, if you like Wacha in this rotation, it's going to be more as a 4 or 5 guy as far as the stuff is concerned. Maybe 3, it just depends, but what you're seeing right now is a guy who just gets gets way too much to the plate. And, you know, I mean, it may get better with lesser teams, but this is the major leagues, folks. I mean, you know, professional hitters are going to hit mistakes over and over again. And he's going to have to be sharper no matter who he faces.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It was, you know, he left after five. It wasn't because of the runs as much, although that didn't help, obviously. But, you know, he almost hit 100 pitches in less than five innings. I mean, you've got to be more efficient than that. You could be, you know, completely throwing up zeros. If you're giving up 100 pitches, you're going to be pulled. You know, we saw Mike warm up Bowman when Leake had thrown 40 pitches in the first inning. I mean, that could have really messed with the bullpen, and Leake settled in for a little while. But I mean, we just got to see a better command. Now, Walker at one time, I think that the idea when Walker was drafted was the idea that he was going to be a low ceiling guy, a guy that was going to reach his potential very quickly, but he might not have that next level. And that's kind of what it's starting to look like. Like, he came onto the scene, and like you say, the two pitches, I mean, that changeup was very, very good.
Yeah.
And he could do with the fastball changeup for a while, but as the league adjusted and they realized he didn't, you know, they didn't have to sit on the, they could wait for the fastball to be in the strike zone, they've kind of been patient, and he's not been able to adjust to that yet. And that's kind of scary. I mean, you know, I know we had that question a few weeks ago about which one would you take long term, him or Carlos, and both of us said Carlos Martinez. But I mean, in an ideal world, you'd have both of them and being very effective. That's what we thought, you know, just a couple years ago. Sometime last year, we were thinking, look, we got this future of these two guys, and that's not saying that it's not going to happen. But it's becoming a little bit more concerning every time he goes out. It used to be you look at that and say, okay, Michael Walker's going out and he's going to get a win, and he's going to pitch, you know, six, seven innings, and he's going to give up a couple runs maybe. And now when Walker goes out there, you don't really feel all that comfortable about it. In fact, you know, if you look at this rotation, he might be the one that you feel the least comfortable about.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that when people talk about potential trades this season, I mean, if you are going to be a big gamble and you don't want to give up, you have to get something, you know, can you see Waka being part of a trade? I mean, potentially, if he kind of seems like he's kind of hit his ceiling and he's kind of curved out, and the Cardinals have Alex Reyes, they have Tim Cooney, has proved everything that he can prove at Memphis. So it's a very interesting season for Waka, because this guy, as I said, he came on the scene, he burst on the scene with a lot of promise, but as you said, you know, and really when it comes to being drafted and what he was expected to do, he was expected to be kind of a guy who was just kind of not ordinary, but not, you know, not an ace. And right now he's one of the guys that, you know, if you said Buck is going to start the game, it's going to determine the season, you'd cringe, you know, and it's one of those things where you do put guys like Jaime Garcia, injuries or not, he has just better stuff than Walker. I mean, when Jaime Garcia was healthy last year, he made any lineup look foolish. Road, home, doesn't matter where he pitched. Doesn't matter if Garcia threw to guys, you know, throwing up a hill at hitters. He would still have devastating stuff. It's just what Jaime Garcia has always had. He's always had some of the best stuff in the staff. You know, Waka he kind of peaked, and then, you know, he got hurt in 2014. Didn't pitch a lot there. Unfortunately, came back at the end. You know, last year he had a great start, but it was a lot of luck in where those batted on balls went, and that kind of dissipated. It kind of went away as the season went on, and now we could just be seeing what Waka is. He could be the fifth starter that you kind of go, hopefully he goes five or six, doesn't get killed, and just kind of gives the Cardinals a decent start, you know, quality start. You're hoping for a quality start from Michael Waka, and that may be what we kind of have to expect from this guy. I mean, you know, he's going to be hitting arbitration, and that's going to be one of those very interesting cases when his does come up.
And you know, like you said, you know, we saw what happened with Alan Craig and Joe Kelly.
Yeah,
it's not out of the question. I mean, this Waka.
I mean, this is the major leagues, man. I mean, you know, you come up, and when hitters are going to figure out pitchers. I mean, they're going to figure you out. I mean, if they see that you're relying on a pitch, like you need this pitch in order to be really good, because if without it, you're just kind of ordinary, you know. If they're able to pound his fastball, and then, you know, his changeup, like I said, it loses a lot of luster. It's not as good. He's basically pitching with a closer arsenal, at least when it comes to, like, quality pitches. Like, you know, I mean, a lot of pitchers had that throwaway pitch, but Waka's got, you know, changeup. He kind of had the curve going last season from time to time, but it was being hung a lot. He really thrived off placing his fastball, and, you know, he could just be a guy who just gets a lot of contact and hopefully escapes with a decent start. And it's just one of those things where you have to – and Cardinal fans, they still think – I think the reason they're so hard on him, and, you know, I have been too, but I know what he's can be like becoming now, is they still think that he could be that great ace, and it's just not going to happen.
It does not seem like it. If he even could develop into a strong two or three, it'd be one thing. But, you know, again, we saw that with Alan Craig and Joe Kelly. They got traded. There's no guarantee that Walker won't go trade. He doesn't have a long-term contract. If at some point in time, it does seem like the Cardinals might have to choose between the two pitchers. And if you trade Walker this offseason, it frees you up to go after Steven Strasburg if you want to. I don't know that they would. But anyway, I mean, there's going to be a spot. That, I mean, they got to find some room for Lance Lynn to come back next year. Maybe that's where Mo goes. Maybe if somebody wants to say, if Walker can pitch pretty well, I mean, if he pitches like he is now, you can't get anything for him, I don't think. But you're not going to get another John Lackey type situation. Although, also, by the way, John Lackey, 6 runs in less than 3 innings tonight. I don't want to say, well, of course, they're playing in Arizona, and that the ball has been, I know Arizona and the Colorado, that Colorado series was crazy. I mean, Colorado hit 10 home runs in that 3 games. So Chase Field is playing like a bandbox now. But still, I think a lot of us kind of saw this coming. I'm not saying that Lackey's going to be this bad all the time, but we had this idea that maybe Mr. Lackey wasn't going to be quite as strong as we had seen. But anyway, I mean, you know, maybe he's able to flip Walker for some sort of return. It's more and more likely that when you start looking at what chips Mo has, that may be the best chip he has. And it seems like Mo's going to have to do something at some point this year. Again, like you say, not now. But I still feel, I know Mo has talked in the past about, I think I saw even talk about it on Cardinal Insider with Stan McNeil's interview from Jupiter with him about how the season kind of falls into phases, and one of those phases is, you know, it's not until after the draft when the market starts to shape up. It's possible that Cardinals aren't going to be able to wait till after the draft this year. I don't know, and I've said this before, I don't know that they're going to be able to go down to July 20th, 25th, 30th, before they make a deal this year, because I just don't know they're going to impact. We've got to make sure that they don't stay, get fall out of the race or anything like that. And you know, right now, they're 3 games out. I mean, that's pretty, you know, as far as you can get out after 3 games, that's where they're at. So you don't want to see them get too far out of that. I mean, people can talk about 2011 all they want. There's a reason we talk about 2011, and that's the fact that it was a freaking miracle. You know, miracles don't happen every year. Otherwise, they're called, you know, everyday life. And that just doesn't happen. So you want to stay close, and you want to stay in the race. And, you know, again, they're not out of it. We're not suggesting that things happen to be done this week or things are doomed. But like you said earlier, you know, if we come to a recording next week and they've played the Braves and they played the Brewers and they're only – you know, what, 2-10 or whatever it is, yeah, there's going to be some concern. Because if you can't go and win series against the Braves and the Brewers, you're not going to go win games against the Cubs and the Pirates and the Dodgers and things of that nature. So, you know, hopefully we're not having that conversation, though.
Yeah, I mean, you just hope that, you know, the Cardinals, okay, you know, you go out to Pittsburgh, you get thumped, you know, against a team that's expected to win and contend with you for the division. I mean, if they ain't get... I mean, it's like they went to Milwaukee in the first 3 games and got just totally, you know, beaten up and slapped around. I mean, this is a really good team in a park that the Cardinals don't really play that well in. I mean, they've had a lot of tough luck. If you look at, like, last year, I mean, the walk-off wins in Pittsburgh, I mean, there's some tough losses there. So, you know, you have to go down to Atlanta and you have to hit, you have to win. You know, you just need to get that first win. I think we'd all be good if we just got that first win. And maybe, you know, you get the first series win. Maybe you just get really angry and sweep the Braves. Just show that you can hit, you know, I mean, get some extra base hits, get out to leads. hold the leads, you know, pitch well. I mean, you do have Jaime Garcia and Carlos Martinez going, so Waino is going to pitch the finale. So hopefully you can go down there and right the ship. Because then you really have an easy stretch of games against division opponents you should handle. This is a good test because you're going to face teams that you're going to face as often as the Cubs and the Pirates and the Brewers and the Reds. So if you can't play good against these teams, I mean, this is going to be an ugly reality that comes to fruition way too early. So hopefully the Cardinals can rebound and right the ship.
Yeah, and that's the hope. And I mean, most likely they will. I mean, that's just the deal. Yeah, that Arizona Cubs game, 6-4, and the Cubs lead off the inning with a double. That one may wind up 12-8 or 12-10.
And something that Cards brought up is that the Cubs are kind of ready for this kind of injury. Because now, Chris Bryant goes to left and Tommy Lestelle goes to third, and you're good. That's just the Cubs, having that kind of offensive firepower depth. So they're kind of ready for it. The Cardinals, are going to be tested in how fast they can plug a hole because, Peralta goes down and it's a big hole. The Cubs might lose a guy, but they might be able to shift around because they have all that young offensive depth.
And that's true. I mean, they can cover it some, but I feel like the drop from Lestella, who I don't, like I said, I don't follow a whole lot, but the drop to LaSalle is a pretty decent drop. I mean, if they lost a Chris Bryant, they're going to notice it. Granted, they've got hitters all the – I guess the flip side of that is actually more the other way. They've got hitters like crazy, but if they lost somebody like Arrieta, they would be – or mainly Arrieta, maybe Lester, they would be in real big trouble because I think they've got some pitchers coming up, but I don't know if they're ready yet.
Yeah.
That's their weakness. I mean, the Cardinals are losing from their weakness. They've kept their strength. They've kept the pitching staff for the most part. They're going through their weakness now, and they're losing some of that. If the Cubs lost from their weakness instead of their strength, then that would be a different story as well. But, again, right now you don't worry too much about the Cubs, and you don't worry too much about the Pirates, and you don't worry about too much about anybody because it's so early. You just go out there and you focus on what you can do. And hopefully, you look up at the end of April and you look up at the end of May and you say, hey, okay, we're still in shooting distance. And maybe you start to get concerned a little bit about them then. I mean, obviously, we want the Cubs to lose as many times as possible. I'm all good for them losing the rest of the season. I mean, if they want to go 2-160, I'm good with that. I don't think we can't scoreboard watch just too much right now. I don't know. Talk a little bit about opening day. Opening day is coming up on Monday. Cardinals sent out their press release about the things that are going on. And Lou Brock's going to throw out the home opener first pitch, which is pretty good because, Lou's had the surgery this year. He lost his leg this offseason. So it's going to be pretty huge to see him out there on the field again.
It really is. I mean, that's what the Cardinals do so well. I mean, and that's what you hope. You hope to go to Atlanta, win some games, come home for the home opener, and, have some good feelings going. Because the home opener at Busch Stadium is something that any baseball fan could appreciate. I mean, you transport any fan from around the league to Busch Stadium on Monday, they would just be blown away. I mean, it's just the Cardinals do it right. I mean, they bring out, the Clydesdales. They bring out the classic legends like Lou Brock. I'm sure Bob Gibson will be there because, and I'm sure he'll go into the booth and share some good old quips about the playing days. But that's just kind of what you come to expect from this franchise. They bring all their greats back. They don't abandon their great players. They bring them back for opening day. So you want to go into Monday feeling pretty good. You don't want to come home in a dull, stupor. I mean, you want to come home, with some wins on your back. Lou climbs the mound. It's going to be a really good moment at Busch Stadium, and you basically want to support those good times with hopefully some wins. So, and it seems like I said this last week. It seems like we always open at home against the Brewers. Mm-hmm. It's almost like every other year, almost at least in the last 10 years, it has to be at least 5 or 6 times.
There's been a lot of time, but I don't know why that works out the way it does. I mean, I know. The Cardinals, I've read that they request to start on the road so they can have some more home games during the summer and things of that nature. But why it's always the Brewers when they start, I couldn't tell you, but you're right. In fact, I think I wouldn't be too surprised if I'm right, the 2000, when they opened Busch Stadium, it was against the Brewers as well. Maybe there's a little 10th anniversary business going on there. Because I'm pretty sure that's the first team that played in this Busch Stadium was the Milwaukee Brewers. I'm pulling that up right now. And, yep, sure enough, Monday, April 10th, 2006, the Brewers were there in town. Mark Mulder got the win at Jason Isringhausen, the save.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising that they tend to, that, you know, let's, unbalanced divisions, I guess, has something to do with that. And the Cardinals have started, I think, with Cincinnati a few times as well. Yeah, I've always enjoyed watching the ceremonies on TV. It's always a legendary thing. All the Hall of Famers are there, and I guess that expands out into the Cardinal Hall of Famers now, with you know, Willie McGee and those of that nature, donning the red jackets and being out there. It's usually a lot of fun, and hopefully it will be again this year. Now, again, Michael Wacha is the one that's starting that game, so we'll have to see how much fun it actually is going to be. Hopefully it's a fun time.
Of course, it's 6-5 now.
Yeah.
The Diamondbacks, I think I saw something on Twitter that was pretty funny, you know. Somebody tweeted out that, you know, if you score a lot of runs on the Cubs, you have to hope that they don't score a lot of runs back at you.
Yeah.
It's just kind of what they're going to do.
That is the thing.
They're a juggernaut, man. I mean, they're going to be one of those teams that, you know, you might get up like 6-0 in the first three innings, but then you got to hold them back for the rest of the game.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, they're never going to be out of it.
With that
lineup. Even if they lose Schwarber for a while, it's a very potent lineup. But, you know, on the flip side, there's a number of times you can get up 6-0 on them, because I just don't know if that pitching staff is going to be as strong as maybe some think. So we will see. I guess, you know, we've probably done enough for this week. You know, there's not been a whole lot of fun stuff to talk about, so we might as well wrap this up. Dan, what are we talking about entertainment-wise today?
You know, I saw a really good movie. You know, it was called, I talked about it last week. It's called Midnight Special. It blends science fiction together with kind of a road movie. I kind of called it equal parts The Abyss, Super 8, and then Road to Perdition. But it's about a father and a son who are on the run from the military, from the FBI, from, you know, religious cults. It's just, they're being chased by everybody because the kid has special powers. And you don't know the details of it, but you know that they all want him, and the dad has to get him somewhere by a certain time. And it takes that little plot, and it really spins a really good tale. You know, Jeff Nichols has written and directed about three good movies now that are really good. Take Shelter, Mud, and now Midnight Special. This movie, it really takes a familiar genre in science fiction and makes it seem fresh again. I mean, you have the science fiction themes, but you also have just a father wanting to protect his son. Jeff Nichols has said that he's made this movie to express what it's like to be a dad. I mean, he just had a kid this past year, and he wanted to make a movie that really reminded him of the responsibility that you feel when you have a son. And, you know, in this movie, you know, your son has special powers. He might not belong here, but you have to protect him. And it's all those things that go through your head if you're a father, that, you know, no matter what your kid is or destined to be, you have to protect them. And it's a movie that takes a lot of twists and turns, and it's got it's got some darkness to it. It's got some good old adventure. Like I said, it kind of brings together the Tom Hanks father-son film, Road to Perdition. And there's a J.J. Abrams directed a coming-of-age flick called Super 8. And then there's also The Abyss, James Cameron in 1989. So it brings together all those movies to make this special, I mean, experience. This is one of those movies that just really, you leave the theater and you feel like you really experienced something. And that people are getting kind of burned out by the Batman, Superman talk, and you want a real movie. You can go see this movie and you'll be transported. And it'll be a movie that, whether you really love it or not, you'll still respect the reach that Jeff Nichols did. And it's one of those movies that just kind of come out, stuck under the radar for people in St. Louis. It comes out comes out tomorrow at Plaza Frontenac. It's playing at a small theater here in Arkansas. It's going to be probably a theater or two in your area. You're going to have to track it down, but it's one of those little gems that will probably swing through theaters and really get swept up really well on DVD. But if you have it at your theater and you want to go see a movie with your dad or with your family, I mean, there isn't, you know, there's a little bit of violence, but there's not a lot that really deters you from going to take your kids to see it. But it's got a lot of, like, wondrous elements to it and images. And it's a movie that I figured was going to be really good. And, you know, you go into a movie with expectations, and this one met it. So it's a very special film. And, you know, if you want something different, you want something worthwhile that's not comic book related, you can go watch, even though Superman comic is mentioned in the movie, just because I think it's just by law, any movie has to mention either Superman. And, you know, of course it has, you know, Kylo Ren is in it. He has a role as NSA analyst that's kind of trying to help track down the kid. And it's funny, is they made a big deal, Shop, about him mentioning a phrase called Red Saber. He says Red Saber in a movie. It's some kind of like government calling card, but everybody's like, he said Red Saber. Kylo Ren said Red Saber, but it's got a good cast. Michael Shannon, Adam Driver, and Joel Edgerton, Kirsten Dunst. It's got a lot of, I mean, they're all really good in the movie because they invest themselves in the part. So Midnight Special was everything I thought it'd be and a little bit more. But you need to discuss a certain movie that had a little teaser this morning.
Yeah, we finally got a little bit of knowledge about Rogue One, the Star Wars movie that'll be out this December. I know everybody thinks, wow, we just had Star Wars. Yes, which we did. The Cardinal of the Force Awakens is now out on Blu-ray and DVD, and my copy. We've been watching the special features here at my house the last couple of days. But Rogue One, we're going back in time, if you will. This is the setup to Episode 4, the one everybody thinks of as Star Wars, as as we find out how the Rebellion finds out about the Death Star, how they steal the plans and get them to Princess Leia. You know, the trailer, you know, was out this morning and watched it a few times. It's so of that world of that Episode 4. I mean, they recreated the Yavin base that you see in Star Wars almost to a T. I mean, the uniforms are there, the people are there. It looks very much like Star Wars in that regard, and it's going to be an interesting story. It's a story we don't know much about because, I mean, we know the main character's name now, but we don't know any of the other characters' name. We don't know who's playing what. You know, we know how it ends. They know that they get the plans to the Death Star, but we don't know how we get there and how this team comes together. And it's a story without Jedi. It's a story without Skywalkers. It's going to be something different for Star Wars, so it's going to be kind of interesting to see how that, not only how the movie goes, because it's going to do well, but how that captures the imagination of the casual people, the people that made Force Awakens, you know, a $2 billion movie. I mean, it's not going to make $2 billion, but are they going to come out to see this and not be so invested? Are they going to say, where's Rey, where's Finn? You know, or are they going to understand this and really get caught up in it? So I think it's going to be fun to see how that comes around, how the marketing is over the next few months. It'll be out December 15th or 16th, whenever that time period is. And so there's some time to build up to that. But I'm just a little surprised they released it on Good Morning America this morning. I thought that was going to save it for Civil War that's going to be out here in about a month. But I'm sure it'll be in front of that as well.
Definitely. Yeah, and it's also one of those movies that it's got a female lead in Felicity Jones, which is really great because you saw how well I did with you know, with Rey in this last film. And you got Forest Whitaker. You got one of my favorite bad guys in Mads Mikkelsen. You know, he's in it. It's got a really good cast. I mean, they seem to really cast things really well. Gareth Edwards is directing it. Of course, you know, he did Godzilla. You know, he really invested himself in this movie. So, yeah, I mean, when I watch it, I mean, I'm obviously not the Star Wars fanatic that you are, but it looks like another good time. I mean, I watched this last Star Wars movie, and it really brought me back to the older films and how well they were done and how, you know, how a Star Wars film should feel like and how it should be experienced. And this film, I agree with you. It really reminded me of what I just saw. And you know, it looks like a really good time in the movies, and it's got another good cast, and it seems to have the same care that the one that just came out did. So that's always a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, I feel like, I mean, yes, Disney's making a ton of money, and yes, that's kind of a focal point as well. But I do think that they're letting these filmmakers take the time and effort and the take some care with it. And we're getting into that generation of these filmmakers that got into film because they saw Star Wars as a young kid. And so they have this reverence for it, but they're not able to have the control that George Lucas had in the prequels, and which is probably the biggest problem with the prequels, is that nobody was able to or willing to tell George Lucas, no, you shouldn't do this or that or whatever. And they kind of came into a bloated mess at times. So, but yeah, I'm very interested to see that. I mean, you know, like I said, Captain America Civil War will be next, and then we can focus on that, because those are, well, I guess Doctor Strange is getting a preview on Jimmy Kimmel next week, I believe.
Probably, and that will probably be the teaser, probably, at the end of Civil War.
It could be. You're right. There'll probably be something there. We'll have to wait and see, but should be. I'm very interested in Civil War too, so that should be good. Yeah, we've done an hour. That's probably enough for three games worth of stuff, especially three games that weren't very pretty at all. So, we'll be back at you next week again, hopefully with much better results to talk about. Until then, Dan, for Dan and Daniel, we'll talk at you later.
Thanks for listening to The Best Dans in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdansinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dans in Baseball.